Okay, let's pray again. Answer me quickly, O Lord, my spirit fades. Do not hide your face from me, lest I become like those who go down to the pit. Let me hear your loving kindness in the morning, for I trust in you. Lead me in the way in which I should go, for to you I lift up my soul. That's Psalm 143, 7 through 8. And when I was a little girl, I memorized that psalm from a song I listened to on a cassette tape my parents had. And all throughout my life, whenever I feel in despair, somehow that is what comes out of me, like a child calling to her parent. And as an adult, when I faced evenings filled with shame or despair or worry or overwhelm, I often find myself in our living room, laying on the floor, reciting this over and over and over, calling out to God for help. And the one I call out to is the Father. It is the Father God. And that's who we're talking about today. I just want to make mention of Father's Day. Father's Day is complicated for some people, just like Mother's Day is complicated for some people. Some of you maybe didn't have a good mother or a good father, or you were hurt by them. And so the idea of looking at God as Father is a little bit difficult, because we really do take our pain in our life and we often really link it up to our theology. It happens very frequently for us. And so it's easy to see how you might have a view of the Father that might be hurtful. That makes sense. And I just want to say that I hope today that you can rest in this view we're bringing, because, I've been resting in it for the last couple, 3 weeks, and it's been just moving me deeply. And I hope there's space for you. If you did not have a father who was kind to you or good to you, I hope there's space for you to rest in the Father this morning. Some of you may have lost your father already, and it's a really big wound in your heart. And I just want to recognize that Father's Day can bring that up too. Some of you might be fathers, and you might be wondering, how do I connect to my children? There's a disconnect. Or you might be like really great at connecting with your children. Or you might be really great with connecting with your children, and then somehow there's a break. And I want to speak to you and say that at the end, we'll get around to how that connects back up in our story about God. So, I want to start today, and I want to tell you two stories about God, and the first one comes out of my life. And I want you to hear this, that I want to describe the God who is the protector and the one who holds us all in his hands. He is around us, in us, and through us. He is holding all things together with his power. And I want to move towards that idea today. Now, oftentimes people move towards that idea with a dominating, angry God. And I want to put to you today that the power of God is something very profound for us. And that is that he is always holding the story he's creating for us in his hand. He never moves away from where he's going in his fathering of us and in the story of what he's doing to return us to him. And that is a very hopeful, powerful thing. And so I think oftentimes when I think about the power of God, how, I asked him for this and he didn't do it. Could he have done it? Why didn't he do it? Why doesn't he fix this? And I wanted to say that in my opinion, that's because he's saying, Angie, there's a story I'm making. This is where my power is in this story that I'm making. And you're going to walk through all of these things on your way there. And I'm holding the good for you. I know I've said it a lot. I almost say it too much. The idea that God has got one foot in the hope and one foot in the dysregulation. And so we'll hear the story of this strength. And we'll also hear the story of him reaching into the pit where we are, very close to us in our pain. That's how he is. He holds both. So I want to show you a picture. This is a picture of me and my dad. Got a lot bigger. yes, and I want you to look at it because it's a really great picture of a father caring and loving for his child. Now, you might look and my dad's not doing anything necessarily for me. He's not feeding me. He's not changing my diaper. But what he is doing is attuning to me in that moment. He's connecting with me. I reached out to him and grabbed his arm, and with delight, he turned around and looked at me. That's the Father. The Father is attuned to his children. He responds to them. He hears them. And that's a beautiful thing. So I want to tell you another story about my dad that is one of my favorite stories. And this took place in 1977. So I was 9 years old, almost 10. And we went from our home in Memphis, Tennessee, on vacation to Alabama. And we went to the highest mountain in Alabama to hike to the top. Now, don't be too impressed when you hear the highest mountain in Alabama. Bo and I looked it up. It's actually lower than where we're sitting right now. So it's not that impressive. But I will say, because of corrosion in the area around it, it is quite tall related to the valley it's in. So we hiked up to the top. And when we got to the top, there was a group of teenagers and young adults who were there at the top. And my dad actually had a picture of it, and he gave it to me. Glenn, thank you so much. Glenn cleared it up with AI. It was like a fuzzy 70s picture. but these adults, young adults and teens, were up there singing worship songs. And I think I remember they were singing something like, "In the stars his handiwork I see." Do you remember that one? "On the wind he speaks with majesty. Though he ruleth over land and sea, what is that to me?" You guys remember it? It just came to me as soon as I saw them. But it's perfect. We're talking about this God of majesty who is coming and protecting us and loving us. And the end of the song is, "What is that to me? He is everything to me. He came close to me." That's the end of the song, is that he walked with me and showed me his grace. And we're going to experience all that this morning. So anyway, we're standing there, we're listening to them, we're really amazed. And my dad is holding my brother and I back from the edge. As you can see, everybody else got to sit on the edge, and we were kind of jealous because he was really scared. So we were way back. And we were watching, and as we watched, a storm was coming towards us. And it was below us. We were above the storm, and it was coming towards us. And we're like, "Wow, that's so cool." And all of a sudden, it was on us. And it came up, and we were in a torrent, under a torrent of rain. I mean, the mud, it was mud just rushing down this mountain. And the teens and the young adults, they jumped up, they grabbed their stuff. They were laughing and screaming and running down. And all of a sudden, I felt my arm go up, and my dad had grabbed me by the arm, and he'd grabbed my brother by the arm, and he began to run down the mountain with us in his arms. So I was running, and then suddenly I was running in the air. I was running on the ground, and then I was running in the air, and then I was running on the ground and running in the air, and he carried us down the mountain that way, up and down, touching down in spots that were safe. His feet were sure. And he took us to the bottom of the mountain safe and sound. And it remains one of my favorite memories of my dad, of that strong one who is mighty to save and who cares for us. It's beautiful. The next picture I want to show you took place 6 months later. This is my family. And we were moving from Tennessee to Northern California. My dad had been praying with my mom and about this move. His business wanted him to move, and it was going to rip us apart because we were living around both sets of grandparents, all of our cousins. It was the only home we'd ever known. And as you can see here, everyone's eyes are really kind of weepy. This was our goodbye photograph. And what I want you to notice is going to be the bridge to the next story for us. And that is that the most weepy eyes in that group are my father's. My father was moving us through hardship far away to another land. And he felt the weight of it. And he felt what it was going to do for us and to us. And he, with courage, took us on that adventure, but not without tears. My brother's so cute. He was here last week. Did anyone see him? He was the really tall guy next to me. My little brother. Yeah. Anyway, so that leads us to our next story. That this God who rescues and protects is also the God who reaches into our pit. The pit that we talked about at the beginning. The place where we are afraid. The place where we are ashamed. And the reason he does this is because he is absolutely over the moon for us. And we're going to tell a story that's often used to talk about a lot of things, like the divide between brothers and about loving others and bringing them into the fold. But what I want to really focus on today is the father in this story. And one of the things I was looking at when I was studying for this, I was looking at different, ideas of God throughout time. You know, at the time the people of Israel were talking about this protector God, there were lots of other people talking about gods too. And a lot of them were very authoritarian and very disconnected from the people that followed them. But the thing that's very interesting about God from the beginning, the God of Israel, our God, is that he was intimately connected with us from the start. He was an intimate God, even in the Old Testament. Some people might say, well, not really, but he was. If you look through the stories, he kept appearing to people, and he was guiding and directing his story a direction that was toward reconciliation and connection. And some people even say that once you get to the New Testament, you find that God is radically, radically intimate with his people. And I just wanted to really focus on that today. So we're going to have a story. Now, to have the story, we have to prepare just a little bit. The story takes place in Luke. Luke is what I was able to bring a chapter from Luke to you last time I spoke, and this one connects up with it really well in some ways. If you remember, that it was the story of Jesus going into the synagogue and telling the people from his town, hey, I'm the Messiah, and you're not going to like it much because the first place I'm going is to the people you don't want me to go to. And it made them very angry. Well, this story is like continuation of that story. And this story takes place much further down the road as Jesus is on the road to Jerusalem to die. And on the road to Jerusalem, oftentimes gospel writers have a lot to say about what Jesus does on that road to his purpose. And Luke decided to share the stories of Jesus on the road to dying. And this story is there. Well, the thing that you have to know, and I think you already do, is that the Pharisees are a big part of this story. And a lot of the reason the story is told. And I want to really emphasize the fact right now that it's really easy for us to look at the Pharisees and say, oh, wow, they're really bad. I think they're like this group over here. And we kind of equate them to some group that we're not in, and we're like, oh yeah, they're being a Pharisee. That's really bad. But the reality is we all have Pharisee parts in us. We all have people that we don't want to see in this story. And it's really a good thing to sometimes reflect and go, where am I saying, that person's too toxic. I don't want that person here. Or, oh, that person is from a political party I don't like and thinks so differently from me, and they don't deserve to be part of this conversation, or whatever we do, to realize that we all have that tendency. And so this story hits us on a couple of levels. We also are often kicked out. We're left out. We're in the dark. We also try really hard to accomplish this life, to accomplish our salvation on our own by doing all these good things to try and fix ourselves or to make ourselves. And this story kind of flies in the face of that. Not kind of, it actually really flies in the face of that idea. So I wonder if you've guessed the story. In this story, Jesus is about to tell a story to a group of people. Sinners and tax collectors. They've come close. Jesus parties with them quite frequently. This is problematic for the Pharisees for lots of reasons. One, they are really committed to the law of the Torah, being the law of the land. And so sinners, in their mind, were people who were not following the law. And not following the law the way they had specified. So they had a lot of different rules about how that should be done. And they really didn't want to have dinner with people who didn't follow those. The other group, the tax collectors, they also hated, and they hated them because the tax collectors were taking money from them, their inheritance. They were taking it and giving it to Rome, to a Gentile group of people. and that was repulsive to them, and they refused to eat with Gentiles, and they refused to eat and party with tax collectors. And here Jesus was, he was starting to speak, and they came forward very familiar with him, and the Pharisees were not happy. And so they started grumbling. Why is he sitting with these people? Why is he eating with them? Does he know what they're like? Like, what is wrong with him? And so Jesus looked at them and he said, which one of you, if you had 100 sheep and one of them was lost, would leave the 99 and go and find him? And this began a series of three stories that Jesus told directly to them about two things: the nature of the kingdom of God, and the Father's heart. Today, we're wrapped up in the third one, and that we're going to look at here. And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. I want to pause there for just a second and tell you that that is a very loaded sentence. The people of that day would have understood it quite well. That we've often told it as that he was asking for his inheritance, which he was, but it's really important to note that it was the property he was asking for. He was saying, I'd like my section of property, and he was planning to go to a Gentile city and sell it. And this was a big violation against his father, but also against the village he lived in. So he was taking that inheritance out of the people of Israel's, Israel, they would have seen it that way, that out of the Israeli or the Jewish inheritance and giving it away to the Gentiles. And he also might as well have said, you've probably heard this, he might as well have said, Father, I don't care if you're alive or dead. You might as well be dead. So that's what was loaded into this moment. And the father, contrary to what would happen in this region, this is another thing about the region that they were living in, it still kind of is in places like Iran. You hear about children of a family who in some way the family feels they've disgraced them, and some of them have even been killed for that. It's a very serious thing to disgrace your family in this time and in this region. And so they would have, you know, the father would not have given him the inheritance, most likely. And there would have been a real big, explosive kind of moment. And one of the things I learned from a man named Kenneth Bailey, who studied all of this, he said that the older son would have, in that culture, come and been speaking between the father and the son and mediating between them. But the older son doesn't do this in the story. And so the younger son leaves, and the father gives him that portion of the land. So here we are in the next part. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. So this is all. This is how we, the clue that he's in a Gentile city because of the pigs. Jewish people did not raise pigs or eat them. And so this is just Jesus really making it clear that this son went out, that there's a big violation of the family and of the village around them. And this son is sitting here and he is at the end of himself. There's nothing he can do to fix this. And so he ends up in this pig field and pig pen. And he is taking care of the pigs. He's feeding them. And he's so hungry because of the famine that he is wanting to eat their food. And they don't let him. And he is at the lowest spot, and he says, I just, you know, my father's servants, they have it better than I do. That's coming next. Let's read that. When he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. He was thinking transactionally about how to get out of this pickle. He was like, if I can go and work as a servant, I can earn the money back, pay my father back, I can get my place back, I can make myself great again, I can make myself good again in my father's eyes. And maybe that'll be great. Like, this ought to work out really well. So I'll go back and I'll apologize, and then I'll make sure he knows I'm going to work for him and it's all going to work out okay. And so he starts home. And while he's on his way home, the father is here in his home watching the edge of the village. One of the things Kenneth Bailey says about the culture is that when a son has done something like this, he will not be welcomed back in the village. And what would happen is the villagers would take a clay pot full of burnt corn, and they would be at the edge of the village, and they would crash the pot, and they would say, you no longer are a part of us, you must leave. And so the father is watching. And he's watching the edge of the village, and before they can do that, he sees his son a far way off. And he begins to be so overjoyed to see him, and he grabs up his robes, and exposing his legs, exposing probably to his undergarments, and running in front of the village, right through the village, to the edge of the village where his son is, and we'll see what happens. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this my son was dead and he is alive again. He was lost and he is found. And they began to celebrate. They had a party. Jesus was big on parties, just so you know. And he invited everyone. Well, I want to just talk about the significance of him running. There are many people who look at this story and say, well, this was a social story. This is about the community. This is about the fathers. And I just don't think so. I mean, sure, there's social things in it, but I think this story really is about Jesus and his sacrifice for us, that he entered our shame. And this is really seen in the father running across in front of the village to his son with abandon. The other thing I want to say about the father in this is that he was Twitterpated. Do you remember Bambi? I'm just taking us all back today to the olden days. That's what I always call it, the olden days. In Bambi, there's a scene where Bambi is a deer, and the bunny, and I think there might have been an owl. They were really young, and they're coming of age, and they see the girl version of themselves that they've known all along, but suddenly, you know, everyone's coming of age, and they're like, oh, and they get kind of dizzy and like, what am I doing? They get funny in that moment, and they're just overtaken by these female counterparts. And I was thinking about that in relation to God, and it's different. We're talking about the Father, but there is a sense, fathers, you know this, when you first saw your baby, that you became undone. Do you remember that day? The first time you saw your baby, if any of you have had them, the first time you saw your child and you realized your life was changed completely. You were head over heels for this child. You were Twitterpated. Nothing was going to be the same. And I want to tell you today, the thing I want you to hear the most from this story about fathers is that the Father feels that way about every one of you. Every one of you. He feels that way about everyone in the neighborhood around us. Every one of them. About the homeless person you passed on the corner when you came here. He feels that way about the people who are all across this state, all across this nation, all across this world. He is Twitterpated over all of us. He is undone by us in his life. I don't know how often you've thought of that with God, how much you believe that, but this story to me, it speaks that word so clearly because he became so undone that he ran to his son. It's such a powerful picture. He didn't just walk. He didn't tell him, well, let's look at that transactional idea you have. You could work for me. You need to pay me back. That was a really bad move. Not that that would not be ever not appropriate to say. That may be appropriate to say. But he was so undone at the appearance of his son that he ran. He ran and he uncovered his legs. Like he showed himself. And he showed that the village saw it all. They saw him undone. So now we're going to come to the next part. This is a hard part. But I don't know if you realize that some people call this story the prodigal sons. Have you ever thought of that? The prodigal sons. There's two boys who went away from their father and two invitations back. And here it is. Now the older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has received him back, safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. And his father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, look, many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. And when this son of yours comes home, he's devoured your property with prostitutes. You kill the fatted calf for him. Can you just hear him? And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. All that is mine is yours. It is fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. This older brother was living in, honestly, the same economy his younger brother was. He wanted to prove himself worthy of what he got. I deserve this. I've done all this work. Look at, he hasn't done anything. Look, he went against you. He misused you, but was this older son, was he really even connected with the father? Was he even really open to the father if he viewed him as a taskmaster and himself as a slave, trying to prove his worth, trying to be the best, trying to save himself? And the father looks at him with absolute Twitter patience. And he says, son, all of that I have is yours. You're not disconnected from me. I'm here for you. Come and celebrate. And we don't know. Jesus didn't answer the story. He didn't tell us whether the son went home to celebrate or not. He left it open. I think he was asking the Pharisees a question. And, you know, I've always, all my life, I've kind of thought, well, he was really just getting the Pharisees, just, you know, poking them, and that poking led to the cross, you know, it kind of assisted that journey. They got really mad. But I was thinking this week, and I thought, I don't think he was poking. I think he was inviting. I think he was looking at the Pharisees, and he was saying, I long for you. I want you with me. I think he was saying, heaven is not heaven if you're not there. I think he says that to you. Heaven is not heaven to me if you're not there. Heaven is not heaven to me if that person you hate is not there. Heaven is not heaven to me if that person who thinks differently than you and you really hate their ideas is not there. Heaven is where you all are for me. If you're a dad, I think you've had feelings like that before about your kids. Like, this vacation is great, but if my kids were here, I love them. You know what it's like. You're looking at your kids, and they're, one of my favorites is when our kids are in the kitchen together. They're all adults now, and they're bantering back and forth, and they're loving each other and enjoying each other. And my husband and I will sit in the other room, and we just feel this like welling feeling in our chest of like, oh, I could not love them more. I could not love them more. And the way they love each other, oh my gosh. And then when they fight, it's like, oh, no, don't fight. Because I love you all so much. And heaven is not heaven for me without you. And this is the Father. This is the Father's love for us. And the last thing I want to say about God is that he comes and he blesses us after this story. I think there's a sense in the world of fathers, that fathers have the opportunity to deeply bless the people around them, the people who are younger than them. And I learned about this from my husband. He was a part of something called Mankind Project. And it was really important to those men who are doing men's work to talk about what it means to bless those coming after us and to really be thinking in that regard. And I think when I listen to this story, I love the thought that the Father is not only saying, I want you here with me, but I want you to have your view towards everyone else who needs to come here with me. That the unique ways I've gifted you to work in this world are about this story that I'm holding over here while I hold the story of the pain. This story of reconciliation, this story of bringing you all home to me. And I think that was an important part to Jesus. He was saying to the Pharisees, not only do I want you, not only do I tell you to come, and there's nothing, you have to hear this so clearly, there's not a single thing you could do. There's not a skill you could take on. There's not money you could pay. There's not enslavement to me you could offer that would make me want you more in my heaven than I already do. All those things are not necessary. I am the one who changes you, who draws you to me, who provides you this attachment love relationship. I meet your needs. I call you to me, and I want you in my heaven. And it's not about anything you have done. I don't know that we recognize that so deeply, that I think I still day-to-day feel like there's something I need to be doing, there's something I need to be, or I need to get better at this, or shame on me, I should not do that. Which, those can be good things to think about, but those don't have anything to do with you being loved. And I think, as we think about being fathers or mothers to children, and we worry about, am I doing this right? Am I a good father? Am I a good mother? One of the things I always tell my clients when they come in and they're asking that question is, before you go into that, I want you to get a clear picture of how you are loved. Because until you know that, all that work you're going to be doing to be a good father is going to be transactional. It's going to be to make yourself something, to say, well, I would die if I wasn't a good father or I wasn't a good mother. That would be a horrible thing to think about me. So I've got to really work hard to be a good mother so that I don't have to face that feeling. And I just want to tell you that we all struggle to be good, those of us that are fathers and mothers. We struggle to be a good father. We struggle to be a good mother. It's hard to do. We can't be perfect. And the reality is that when we feel those feelings of I'm not good enough, I haven't paid enough, I haven't done what I need to do to deserve to be here, to deserve this name, that we turn to love, that we turn to the Father who wants us. And I have to tell you that that love is transformative. His love and his presence transforms us into one who loves. Last time I preached, I shared something from Marcus Mumford, from Mumford & Sons, and it was an interview, and it fit in that sermon, and it fits even better here. And it was that he was asked by an interviewer about his son and a song that he wrote about his son, and he said, well, that song is about heaven. My son asked me about what is heaven, Dad, and they were in the car driving to school. And Marcus looked at him and he said, I'm really, really taken with the idea of connection between people, relationships. And so he reached over to his son and he put his hand on his chest and he said, son, I think this is where heaven starts, right here with you. And I want to tell you, he then wrote this song. And the chorus goes like this. It goes, reach across again. Here's where heaven starts. I end where you begin with my hand over your heart. And I think that's what God says to us. You are where heaven starts for me. And he reaches across and he says, I profoundly want to be in relationship with you. And I will die to do that. Okay. So, on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took bread and he broke it. And he said, this is my body given for you. Whenever you eat it, I want you to remember me. I want you to remember my love. And in the same way, he said, this is my blood shed for you. And whenever you drink it, I want you to do that in remembrance of me. And I want to invite you to come today. Come forward to the table just as you are. And to recognize that the Father is running to be at the table with you. And he longs for you. And I also want to invite you, after you come to the table, to go back to your seat. And I'm going to invite you today for Father's Day to think of one word, one to five words, so like a little popcorn, to testify to how God has fathered you. Like the one who sees me, or protector. And after, when I come back up to give the final blessing, I want to invite you guys to testify, any of you that want to the love of God, the Father, for you. But for now, come forward and share in his feast. So, just to reiterate, there's nothing you can do that will make you more loved than you are at this moment. And the Father is insanely crazy about you. And he's insanely crazy about the person next to you, and the person you disagree with, and the person in your neighborhood, and the person across the world. Now, I just invite you really briefly, if any of you have a testimony of how the Father has loved you that you want to share with us in one to five words, really fast, anyone can speak it out.
Unconditional love.
Courage.
Strength of mind.
The
integrator. Huh. Generous love.
Merciful. Patient. Patient. Yes. I feel like this is a great way to give God a gift for Father's Day, to speak what he has done for you. And I hope today you can, as you walk home and you celebrate your fathers, that you can celebrate him in your heart. So I want to bless you. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace forever. If you need a picture of him turning his face toward you, you can think about that picture of my dad looking at me with joy in his face. That's how the Father looks at you. Bless you.